15. After many telephone calls, much pleading on behalf of the defendant, and a long forgiving letter from his mother, it was decided that Dill could stay. We had a week of peace together. After that, little, it seemed. A nightmare was upon us. It began one evening after supper. Dill was over. Aunt Alexandra was in her chair in the corner. Atticus was in his. Jim and I were on the floor reading. It had been a placid week. I had minded Auntie. Jim had outgrown the treehouse, but helped Dill and me construct a new rope ladder for it. Dill had hit upon a foolproof plan to make Boo Radley come out at no cost to ourselves. Place a trail of lemon drops from the back door to the front yard, and he'd follow it like an ant. There was a knock on the front door. Jim answered it and said it was Mr. Heck Tate. "Well, ask him to come in," said Atticus. "I already did. There's some men outside in the yard. They want you to come out." In Macomb, grown men stood outside in the front yard for only two reasons, death and politics. I wondered who had died. Jim and I went to the front door, but Atticus called, "Go back in the house." Jim turned out the living room lights and pressed his nose to a window screen. Aunt Alexandra protested. "Just for a second, Auntie, let's see who it is," he said. Dill and I took another window. A crowd of men were standing around Atticus. They all seemed to be talking at once. "Moving him to the county jail tomorrow," Mr. Tate was saying. "I don't look for any trouble, but I can't guarantee there won't be any." "Don't be foolish, Heck," Atticus said. "This is Macomb. Said I was just uneasy. Heck, we've gotten one postponement of this case just to make sure there's nothing to be uneasy about." "This is Saturday," Atticus said. "Trial'll probably be Monday. You can keep him one night, can't you?" "I don't think anybody in Macomb'll begrudge me a client with times this hard." There was a murmur of glee that died suddenly when Mr. Link Dees said, "Nobody around here's up to anything. It's that old Sarum bunch I'm worried about. Can't you get a... what is it, Heck?" "Change of venue," said Mr. Tate. "Not much point in that, now is it?" Atticus said something inaudible. I turned to Jim, who waved me to silence. "Besides," Atticus was saying, "you're not scared of that crowd, are you? Know how they do when they get shinnied up. They don't usually drink on Sunday. They go to church most of the day," Atticus said. "This is a special occasion, though," someone said. They murmured and buzzed until Auntie said if Jim didn't turn on the living room lights, he would disgrace the family. Jim didn't hear her. "Don't see why you touched it in the first place," Mr. Link Dees was saying. "You've got everything to lose from this, Atticus. I mean everything." "Do you really think so?" This was Atticus's dangerous question. "Do you really think you want to move there, Scout?" Bam, 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 and the checkerboard was swept clean of my men. "Do you really think that, son? Then read this." Jim would struggle the rest of an evening through the speeches of Henry W. Grady. "Link, that boy might go to the chair, but he's not going till the truth's told." Atticus's voice was even, "and you know what the truth is." There was a murmur among the group of men, made more ominous when Atticus moved back to the bottom front step and the men drew nearer to him. Suddenly Jim screamed, "Atticus, the telephone's ringing!" The men jumped a little and scattered. They were people we saw every day, merchants, in-town farmers. Dr. Reynolds was there. So was Mr. Avery, "Well, answer it, son," called Atticus. Laughter broke them up. When Atticus switched on the overhead light in the living room, he found Jim at the window, pale except for the vivid mark of the screen on his nose. "Why on earth are you all sitting in the dark?" he asked. Jim watched him go to his chair and pick up the evening paper. "I sometimes think Atticus subjected every crisis of his life to tranquil evaluation behind the Mobile Register, the Birmingham News, and the Montgomery Advertiser. They were after you, weren't they?" Jim went to him. "They wanted to get you, didn't they?" Atticus lowered the paper and gazed at Jim. "What have you been reading?" he asked. Then he said gently, "No, son. Those were our friends." "It wasn't a gang?" Jim was looking from the corners of his eyes. Atticus tried to stifle a smile, but didn't make it. "No, we don't have mobs and that nonsense in Macomb. I've never heard of a gang in Macomb. Ku Klux got after some Catholics one time." "Never heard of any Catholics in Macomb either," said Atticus. "You're confusing that with something else. Way back about 1920 there was a Klan, but it was a political organization more than anything. Besides, they couldn't find anybody to scare. They paraded by Mr. Sam Levy's house one night, but Sam just stood on his porch and told them things had come to a pretty pass. He'd sold them the very sheets on their backs. Sam made them so ashamed of themselves they went away. The Levy family met all criteria for being fine folks. They did the best they could with the sense they had, and they had been living on the same plot of ground in Macomb for 5 generations. "The Ku Klux is gone," said Atticus. "It'll never come back." I walked home with Dill and returned in time to overhear Atticus saying to Auntie, "In favor of Southern womanhood as much as anybody, but not for preserving polite fiction at the expense of human life," a pronouncement that made me suspect they had been fussing again. I sought Jim and found him in his room, on the bed, deep in thought. "Have they been at it?" I asked. "Sort of. She won't let him alone about Tom Robinson. She almost said Atticus was disgracing the family. Scout, I'm scared." "Scared of what?" "Scared about Atticus. Somebody might hurt him." Jim preferred to remain mysterious. All he would say to my questions was go on and leave him alone. Next day was Sunday. In the interval between Sunday school and church, when the congregation stretched its legs, I saw Atticus standing in the yard with another knot of men. Mr. Heck Tate was present, and I wondered if he had seen the light. He never went to church. Even Mr. Underwood was there. Mr. Underwood had no use for any organization but the Macomb Tribune, of which he was the sole owner, editor, and printer. His days were spent at his linotype, where he refreshed himself occasionally from an ever-present gallon jug of cherry wine. He rarely gathered news. People brought it to him. It was said that he made up every edition of the Macon Tribune out of his own head and wrote it down on the linotype. This was believable. Something must have been up to haul Mr. Underwood out. I caught Atticus coming in the door, and he said that they'd moved Tom Robinson to the Macomb jail. He also said, more to himself than to me, that if they'd kept him there in the first place, there wouldn't have been any fuss. I watched him take his seat on the third row from the front, and I heard him rumble, "Nearer, my God, to thee," some notes behind the rest of us. He never sat with Auntie, Jim, and me. He liked to be by himself in church.